Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This week, John Cena announces his retirement tour. We have ice cold takes on some of the three events of this week. And then on Vader Club, Arn and Terry Funk versus Sabu and Bobby Eaton from ECW, When Worlds Collide. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. We have watched a lot of wrestling. Some of it was good. Chris, what can you say about an NXT PLE that ends on a shot of Joe Hendry? Did you see that?
Yeah, no, I did. No, I did. realistically, I think the discussion for me coming out of this NXT show card, PLE card or whatever, it will be remembered as one of the five worst NXT PLEs of all time.
Yeah,
this was a true nothing show. The only stuff of note was the main event results, and that was handled poorly. And to act like we don't know who the hell Joe Hendry is when we saw Joe Hendry already, and everybody already know it, the Joe Hendry at the end of the show thing is the thing you do if you've never seen Joe Hendry before. But we've seen him on the show. They opened up a battle royal with him that he lost.
I think my note coming out of this weekend is the women had a great weekend. Because women's matches on both shows, I thought, carried these things for the most part. Were they top tier? I thought women's Money in the Bank was. I thought women's Money in the Bank, once it got rolling, was the most enjoyable match of the weekend for me.
And Sol and Kalani was...
They were good.
Over-delivering. They were good, and I think Kalani is on her way to really refining a character of like the overly wound. She's ultimately going to shake out to be a heel. I remain convinced.
Really?
But it's a slow burn though. I think like even the setup with her and Sol. Sol's all like, I don't like the rules. I don't like the structure. I do everything all vibey. She's quoting LeBron James. Meanwhile, Kalani Jordan's quoting Jordan. Now I'm not gonna, I don't want to get into our nuanced takes on Jordan and LeBron James's figures. Suffice it to say that the reputation generally is that Jordan's a harder person to be a teammate with than LeBron James. And like, I think that's sort of revelatory, but I also think even just the whole, like, I like structure, there's a lot of stuff in there that seems like it's all going to be perfectly wound and she'll be cool until she's not.
See, I think she has pure babyface written all over her. I know they're going to eventually turn her heel, but boy, much like Roxanne Perez, I don't want to see her a heel just yet. I think she can say the genuine things and make me believe them, as opposed to Sol, who was like in that vignette is saying, you know, the kind of things you'd buy from a Brookings catalog and put on your wall or something like that. You know, it's like you expect her to be like, she has like motivational posters with slogans on them in her room, and she's just using those and quoting those in her vignettes and stuff. There's a secondary news story that's smaller, but John Cena, surprise appearance on Money in the Bank yesterday. Said that 2025 will be his last year, did not try and swerve anybody, did not try and just came out and said, yes, I am announcing that 2025 will be my last year in ring. Says he will be at next year's Royal Rumble in Indianapolis, will be at the Elimination Chamber and Money in the Bank. said later at his at the press scrum that he was going to try and get about 30 to 40 more matches in. I assume he will be one of the main draws on that first Raw on Netflix. That would be my guess.
I think that's definitely that's got to be part of it. That's why they want him back.
Does he get a title run?
What title?
One of the world titles. I don't think not necessarily the Cody world title, but maybe the other Damian Priest one.
Maybe I could also see him like winning the U.S. title again or something and making that his.
Oh, okay.
I could totally see him going back to that U.S. title and sort of making, you know, the John Cena Open Challenge one more time sort of thing.
I could see, and this would be a hell of a draw to me, especially in, what is it, October?
When I lose, I retire?
No, not then, but for that first match on Netflix, going back to Rock Cena, and maybe like, you know, for like, hey, getting in on that main event track, so to speak, for Mania next year or something to that, something with stakes on it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's other things you could do. You could finally have Orton and Cena team up. That could be, you know, that a fun sort of storyline. They become tag champions, and at the end of their story, they become friends.
Okay. Yeah.
People love Randy. They love to love Randy. They love Cena, and I think people are now at this point of nostalgia for both Orton and Cena. Like when I was watching Money in the Bank and listening to the way people sing Randy's song, that's nostalgia 100%, baby.
I'm going to be interested to see if he gets enough projects where he may have to actually cut back on dates as promised. Because this may be a shock to you, Chris. He's wildly in demand in Hollywood. He really is. I mean, he's doing a lot of different things. He's certainly doing more things than Dwayne is right now. I mean, he's shooting Peacemaker season 2. He has a number of comedies somewhere in the tank. They've found his niche as big, lovable, dumb guy in comedy. So they cast him in a million different things. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, he says he's going to be at Money in the Bank. I don't think he's doing a Money in the Bank match. I just find that out of the realm of possibilities.
I mean, it would be interesting to have Cena be holding the briefcase during his final year.
That's true, too. But that would come in July of next year.
Right.
If he goes the full year. Okay. You sold me on that a little bit. And the other story I had is a little bit lesser. Stephanie Vaquer, fresh off of Forbidden Door, apparently has offers from both WWE and AEW. I got to see her match against Mercedes. I thought it was good, not great, but she really shined to the point where she turned the audience against Mercedes, although that was a New York crowd going against a Boston person, so who knows. But Stephanie Vaquer is interesting. I like her a lot. I think she's light on English, which is going to be a problem in either company.
Is AEW at the point now where they have to overmatch whatever WWE is offering?
I would guess so, but I would guess it also depends on whether or not Vaquer wants to work CMLL still.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like AEW's biggest problem here with diminished ratings and the downtrend is in these negotiations. They've got to offer these wrestlers more money, more years or something.
Yeah.
But essentially more guaranteed income off the contract.
Well, AEW will overpay if they like somebody. Yeah, WWE will not.
And they find new and different ways to overpay. Like, sometimes they just overpay for somebody based on their talent level. Other times they pay market value for a talented person, and then they give them the Jay White treatment. So they've actually found a number of different ways to overpay.
We have a plethora of shows that we could do in the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we watch, whatever we had a chance to get to. Everything from last Friday's SmackDown up through the NXT Heatwave we just watched. And the reason I bring that up is because I think the best thing all week in terms of both weeks of wrestling
Paul Heyman?
Paul Heyman.
Oh, yeah.
My God. Just everything about
that.
That
was so great. Everything about that show.
Getting the chance to get powerbombed in New York City, his hometown, in the largest arena in the world, or the biggest arena in the world to him, MSG, where he spent his youth backstage taking photos and sucking up to the Wizard and Lou Albano and other WWF luminaries, and to get written off with a powerbomb from the Bloodline through a table at age 57. And also just his, he can cry on command, which is kind of endearing and also scary in a way for a guy who's not a quote unquote trained thespian, but is a notable carny. But yeah, no, the Heyman stuff from last Friday, I that was top tier professional wrestling to me.
Oh God, he was just fantastic. And he is the saving grace in what is otherwise a kind of increasingly weak faction with Solo Sikoa and the Samoan knockoff machines. They
Chris.
What?
I like them. I like them as a new gen bloodline where it's like the older guys have gone away and now this generation is a much scarier, more brutal version.
I don't,
but I like Jacob Fatu a lot.
I don't believe that they're more scary. I am not. The menace is not commensurate with the work, and I don't think Solo's character has a lot of legs, honestly.
Huh?
Yeah.
See, I think he's been doing great character work too. I think he's been improving his promos. He's been improving his delivery. I don't know. Okay, I'm higher on it than you. I'll leave it at that. But what did you think? Okay, then what did you think of the sixth man at Money in the Bank then? Because I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Fun, sure. But again, I'm just the Solo Bloodline is losing steam for me. I think the best part was Heyman. The best part was the dynamic between Solo and Heyman. And once you write off Heyman, and now I have to just focus in on these four guys, it's not nearly as interesting.
They do need a wise man.
Right? Like no, and that therein lies the problem, right? If they were as inherently intriguing, like Roman didn't need Heyman as much. And there are plenty of times where Roman, you know, was basically just cowing Heyman off and Heyman was just like, oh, I'm scared. You know, like a Paul Bearer type figure. Whereas Solo has absolutely needed Heyman to play off of in order to carry him. And I think that the steam continues to, you know, come off of this. Now, in terms of the match, I think that Kevin Owens and Randy Orton are really fun sidekicks to Cody Rhodes. And like the story of these guys becoming brothers in arms and like having a strange friendship and camaraderie is good. I actually really like Owens and Cody Rhodes have good chemistry, and obviously Owens and Orton do as well. So like there are things to like on the babyface side. I'm just, dude, the, all the Tongaloas are the same to me.
They're neat. See, this is weird because there has to be, I mean, Solo's good, but he needs a guy who is pushing him to be more and more evil. And it's like there are two guys who I think could be good wise men that are out there right now. One is if they could get Jim Cornette into the company. Jim Cornette replacing Heyman as the Bloodline's wise man sounds, and especially you do the Yokozuna connection type of a thing, I think that'd be interesting.
Okay.
The other one, unfortunately, isn't much on the promo front, and that would be Haku. Just Haku in a suit and sunglasses, just standing there.
Yeah, but I think in our head we're like still seeing like Meng of 2006.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not even seeing like 90s Meng. Yeah, we're seeing like slightly old, but he's even older than that now. Cornette's not a bad choice,
but there's nobody else out there, man. There's nobody in terms of managers.
Right, and they've worked themselves into this corner of like the Bloodline need to get more and more and more and more sinister. And like, how do you really do that absent of taking the belt off of Cody Rhodes? And they shouldn't do that. I mean, putting the belt on Solo, I think, would be a mistake at this point. And if anything, I think this company needs to look at the NXT lessons this week with Trick Williams in particular and go like, we need to stop belting people too soon.
Well, we need to stop doing clever stuff. Yes. Like the ending of that four-way. Not to steal any thunder of yours if you wanted to go directly into it first, but
no, let's get right into that takeover show, because it was really the entire show was built up to this main event because we're doing a title change.
Yeah. I mean, I thought both women's matches were the highlights.
Absolutely. We kind of already hit on that.
Oba Femi and Wesley kind of fell apart a little bit.
Yep.
There, because yep. Oba kind of got a little lost, I think, and a little tired. The pre-show was fun in its own way. I did watch JC Jane and Jasmine Nix versus Ariana Grace and Carmen Petrovic, and then they split them up halfway through Takeover.
Yeah,
which is stupid. My big beef with NXT right now is they have three different authority figures on the effing show, and they don't need it. Between Stevie Turner, Rob Stone, and
No, you're four. Shawn Michaels,
yeah.
Shawn Michaels in there, and yeah,
Ava, yeah.
Right? You have Shawn Michaels saying, we're going to do this thing with Ava, and it's like, if Ava's the GM, Ava's the GM. If Shawn Michaels is the GM, Shawn Michaels is the GM. We don't need this many authority figures on there. Stevie and Stone, like, don't... I mean, Stevie should be angling for a title shot, but that would have made a lot more sense if Lola had beaten Roxanne tonight.
Oh, the tag match was fun. Chase U and Frazier and A Kid, or Axiom, sorry.
Yes.
I thought Duke Hudson had a rather good night, but you know, I may be just overlooking the fact that he is a really good hot tag. As one person told me, he goes, he's the best hot tag in NXT right now in terms of, you know, a fiery babyface type thing. But I thought Duke Hudson was having a great night for a while there.
I think so as well. What really fell apart for me in the main event, and I was kind of eagerly and nervously awaiting it, was the Javon Evans Trick Williams encounter, where they proceeded to just exchange a bunch of different offensive blows and none of it looked good. Like the fist back and forth looked bad. And it even kind of culminated in a finish of them both kicking. It was supposed to be like them both kicking each other at the same time, but the timing on that looked horrible. I mean, it just kind of like looked like they just fell out of the sky together.
I did howl at the Sean Spears, Ethan Page handshake and both go for the eye poke at the same time.
Yes.
Type of thing.
wasn't that the whole like vibe of the match though? Is that
yes.
Paige and Spears really had to do the work throughout the match to make the match actually have connective tissue?
But I hated that ending. I hated, that is clever as the enemy of good. That is, we need to think of a way for. They should have just belted Ethan Page in the match against
Ethan
Trick
Page
Williams.
Should have had a plan. It's a no disqualification match. He should have been able to handcuff Sean Spears or, you know, tie him up under the ring. You know, basically set it up so that he can get, you know, whoever his chosen target is, you know, in for the win. But once again, it like makes Javon Evans, like the other problem with this finish is, okay, it's like, oh, well, Javon Evans can eat the pin. Yeah, I guess, except that he keeps choking in every single clutch situation he's put in.
Yeah, they keep saying he's 20, but that doesn't mean he's not an imbecile sometimes for doing these athletic moves and then getting caught.
Right. Even in like a sort of kayfabe scenario, he's doing athletic moves that aren't paying off for him. And then, like, you know, from a reviewer's eye, the timing on all of these is indie-rific. It's loose. He's, you know, when he's doing the springboard stunner off the top ropes, Paige isn't there in time for him, and you know, you got to communicate this. This is your spot. It's not an Ethan Page spot. You're the one calling the, you know, jumpy stunner.
You like, say indie-rific. I'm thinking AEW Rampage in many ways.
No,
cleaner. They're cleaner.
Right. Yeah. No, it's the timing you would get at your local indie is the way it feels like to me.
Yeah.
You know, we're going for a big move, but the big moves aren't executed with snap and crispness that you would want to see on replay. And I mean, they had to, that was Javon Evans's highlight reel. They had to make sure they went back and do it. But watching it again, you see Ethan Page like trying to get down there to make it happen. I mean, Evans is not ready at this point, and Trick Williams was never ready at any point during this run. And I think the fact that they had to use smoke and mirrors in his final match only further kind of cements that.
I don't understand the logic of taking the title off of him though. So that, but I thought,
oh,
sure,
I do.
Well, he's, hold on. Let me think because I want to go back to your Ethan Page point. I thought he did have a plan, because when he walks into the arena, there's that giant mural that says "We the North." And I thought for sure Josh Alexander was coming out to help him, because they used to be known as the North type of a thing. I thought it was, you know, Canadian up there. There were reports that they were backstage, et cetera, et cetera. I thought, okay, another TNA type thing here. But I thought they'd do the thing where they know that Trick's not the greatest ring technician in the world, so they would just continue doing matches that protect him as he improved, instead of just taking the title off of him and saying, well, this is a lost cause.
I mean, I think the issue is that he's been champion what now, 4 or 5 months?
Yeah.
He's over enough. People like saying "whoop that trick" in a context that won't get you into trouble.
Yes.
So I mean I get that it's fun to say a naughty word sort of thing, but he himself as a vibe is not a consistent thing. The look, the energy, the style, the speech, it's not all gelling together the way, like, for example, it does for Carmelo Hayes. Like, Trick feels a little more like he's trying to find his style. And then that extends only further into the ring, where his offense continues to be a mishmash of stuff. A mishmash of stuff generally glued together with crappy-looking kicks. And I don't know who told him that he needs to have a kick-based offense, but they need to go to timeout and not leave until they thought about what they've done, because it does not work for him. The bicycle kick that he did during this match, the man can't get up over his hip, and like the little spinny kicks when he went for the Booker T kick, and Booker's like, I know, I recognize that. I'm like, yes, I barely recognize that. It's like a child drawing the Mona Lisa. Like
was it that bad?
It was like maybe a step above. You know what?
Okay.
It's like a 13-year-old who's in art class but isn't very good doing a rendition of the Mona Lisa.
Mm.
There's some shading.
Your turn, sir. Where do you want to go? Money in the Bank.
I guess we finish off with the Joe Hendry reveal, just because I do think it's worth noting. I hated the Joe Hendry reveal. Why show this man on television at all prior to just tacking him on to the end of this pay-per-view?
Because right.
I guess he's the new big debut, except that we saw him and he lost in a title contendership battle royal for the main event that we just watched.
He's not even under contract with the company. He's a TNA guy.
It is a baffling thing to do.
I'm watching that and going, I mean, okay, it's close with Ethan Page. And then all of a sudden you see Joe Hendry looking. I was like, what? No, I don't need that tease. I'm not looking forward to that. I don't care. Joe Hendry is not a championship level wrestler for even TNA.
I know. And let us focus in on All Ego Ethan Page's champion. I think, here's the thing with Ethan Page. This launch is terrible, but he's going to get a couple of good matches in here. By the time he has his second good match, we'll forget about this ridiculous launch of his title reign, hopefully.
Yes.
It'll be a thing we reference, but his second good match, because he looked great. He was the thing that kept this title match together and made it watchable was Ethan Page's offense. All the power moves, all the stuff where he was driving the car, he was 100%, you know, and Pierce for his part was fine as well, but it was Paige will settle in nicely as their champion. I guess now we should.
He'll also cut some good promos.
Yes. Yes. And I think that the right guy is champion. And, you know, as compared to last show where that didn't happen, the right people winning for the health of the show, I think, is always more important than even necessarily how you get there, though obviously that matters as well.
Okay. And now you wanted to go to...
I guess we'll do Money in the Bank, shall we?
A fun show, not the cleanest show at times. Like, and I actually, the worst match for me was the first one. I didn't like the men's Money in the Bank all that much. I thought it was good. I didn't think it was anything spectacular, but I did enjoy Drew's story throughout the show. I did like that, but like you were talking about Carmelo Hayes, you know, being one up on Javon, he's just nothing on this main roster right now. I thought Andrade was okay, but they didn't give him a lot. I mean, Chad Gable really carried this match to me.
Yeah, I agree on that too. He is not going to be Chad Gable for that much longer, probably.
I'm thankful they didn't do anything with the Wyatt Six.
Ugh.
And Chad during this match. That was my fear. When he's climbing up the ladder and he's all alone, I thought the lights were going to go out and then smoke would come up and then, you know, spooky crap. At least they didn't do that. But so Drew McIntyre starts off winning the briefcase. I liked Sami Zayn versus Braun Breaker.
Boy, I thought that was a really entertaining match. The only low light of the match was just they didn't have the most clever of finishes. And I don't think running into a toe kick off of the spear really does the oomph thing that you need for a finish like that.
He needed something else other than the hell of a kick. I'm not saying the top rope brainbuster, you pull that out here because you're pulling that out for special occasions.
But Sammy should have went for a moonsault. Like, he does the Helluva kick and finishes off of the moonsault.
Or he does the Helluva kick and then he actually hits the Falcon Arrow and pins, or the Blue Falcon Bomb, or whatever it is that everybody always kicks out at two with him on. You know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I'm with you.
Braun was really good in this match. I thought
dad. The dynamic between them was so fun. Sami Zayn slowly turning more and more into Mick Foley, and I love it.
Yes.
And
oh, that's a good call.
And this match is like Sami Zayn, the veteran babyface who has much more seasoning and understands things better than Braun Breaker. Braun Breaker's still doing the heel thing, but there's a youth versus age thing that's also playing out here, where Breaker, as the heel, only really knows how to get the upper hand or regain the energy through power moves. And then afterwards, after he hits a power move, he's kind of vamping. There's like a difference between the veteran, slow, methodical heel where I know I'm going for the knee and I'm just slowly picking him apart and I'm taking my time. And Breaker's thing where he'd do a big move and then all of a sudden he's kind of like, all right, where are we going next with this? Where is this offense going next? And Zayn, always knowing like some of the veteran tricks, knowing his way around the ring and using that against Breaker. I thought the dynamic on this was very, very, very good. I'm ready for another chapter of this. Loved Breaker's reaction at the end of the match. I think his facials are really good.
Yeah.
Breaker's eyes are very, very expressive, where they are both, they manage to sell anger, self-frustration, and shame all concurrently.
He's a much better actor than either of his namesake in terms of his father or his uncle.
Oh, God, yeah.
They are much better gym class bully type wrestlers, but Braun has a lot more charisma than either of those two, I think.
Yeah, he's got more charisma and he's more complex.
Yes.
And I think that's ultimately going to hold him in good stead as well. That like he's just a more complex wrestler while still basically having all the same aspects of not quite the same size as Scott, obviously, but the same athleticism, level of athleticism, just packaged differently.
Where do you stand? Did Damian Priest forget to kick out, or did they not hit the music at two at the appropriate time?
I was wondering if he bonked his head. When I went and rewatched,
that's actually a good call, possibly.
When I went and rewatched it, I mean, he wasn't even effing close. You know, like I mean, he seemed really out of it, and then he rolls, and he really seems out of sorts when he's rolling away when McIntyre comes out. And McIntyre doesn't even go to Priest. He goes on to Seth Rollins, which was a weird call too. So I think something was wrong with Priest. I'm wondering if during the sequence when Rollins went to do the knee to the head, because they did like the Falcon. So it's like a Seth Rollins superplex into the Falcon Arrow.
Right.
And reverse one is knee to the head, reverse two is knee to the head, finish the sequence. I'm wondering if Seth Rollins beamed Damian Priest with his knee, and then Priest just kind of like had his bell rung a little bit when he came down on that Falcon Arrow.
And if he did, I'm positive that he's wearing a brace underneath his tights. So it might have been a metal brace that donked him.
Ah, that could be it.
No, I hadn't heard that brought up. But,
I mean, because I watched it, rewatched it. Don't think, I mean, Rollins, his reaction is authentic. And you can even see in his eyes a searching for, okay, what the hell do I do now? Because, you know, the Vince rule here is you call it like a shoot. So Rollins would have came up with that and instinctually would be thinking that this ref is going to count this as three and we're just going to figure this out on Monday. Instead, and this is why I think Vince's rule on this is probably right too. Instead, you have Rollins sitting there like, what? Like looking at the ref, not knowing if he's supposed to sell it at the ref. And then all of a sudden, like, hit his damn music. Here comes McIntyre. And like McIntyre starts, you know, making his way down the ring. I think the ref froze,
yes,
blew the call because in his mind, he's like, well, shit, we've got so many more story beats after this.
Yes.
I think, oh yeah. Like I have to plow through this.
Yeah. I could see in, I think his name's Eddie's eyes. He's one, two, and he does the wipe thing in terms of like when you're counting two and you're not going to count three, you do kind of the whiff of the mat type thing. And I didn't see his shoulder come up.
No,
and
no,
he didn't Priest. See, and Priest he didn't see his shoulder come up.
No, Priest's
and
not close.
And he's just like, oh, I mean, you can just see kind of the fear of God in his eyes at that moment because it's like, well, if I had counted the three, then all this stuff is moot now out the window.
Discombobulate so many things off of this, right? Because downstream off of this sequence here, you need to still have Seth Rollins in this match. This match actually can't be decided because Drew McIntyre needs to come down and it needs to be a no DQ match.
Right.
Or so the ref is thinking. He's actually wrong on this. And this gets back to, I'm not trying to defend Vince here, but this is why you just call it like a shoot because it doesn't actually matter. I'm going to tell you why here. Drew McIntyre comes down, now tries to cash in on new world champion Seth Rollins. All right. But CM Punk can still blow this for Drew McIntyre by just coming down and beating the crap out of Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre now has a blown cash in, doesn't have the title.
Wins by DQ.
Right.
So Rollins still can't, because remember the stip is if Rollins loses, he can't go after the title
Rollins would technically be champion.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
okay.
Right. So that's the one thing that's blown. And then you can just run this.
You can fix that on Raw. Yeah.
Right. You can fix this on Monday. So like this was, I mean, it's tough to make these calls in the moment, but the wrong call was made here because this is much more easily fixed. And here's the problem. They're still going to probably have to come around and fix this on Monday because too many people were too not okay with that finish, even the live audience there. I think they're going to have
Triple H brought it up in the press scrum, too.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to come up with something like Finn Balor paid off the referee. or you know,
that's
some,
what I was thinking at first. I'm thinking, is this an angle story type thing?
Liv Morgan worked her feminine wiles on this referee to mess up this match. No, I'm right, because that would actually make
sense. Would do it,
right? Like she basically told this referee was, you know, whatever charm she had, Priest has to win, so that she can come back and say to Priest,
they find the hotel card in the referee's locker or something like
right. Like, there's a number of different ways you could even write around that, but they're going to end up having to write around that now as well. Also, I mean, I guess they're going to have to, like, maybe move this more into a Seth and Drew McIntyre are friends now sort of storyline. Because, like, now Seth has also been screwed. So, like, Drew and Seth can be the, like, obnoxious we've been screwed brothers.
And now allow me to praise the WWE main roster women's division. These women are tough as nails. And, yeah, this match started out, you know, a little bit clunky, but Zoe Stark, Io Sky, Lyra, Naomi, Stratton. Stratton hit that ground hard again doing a moonsault, and Chelsea Green, who, God bless Chelsea Green for being the faux baby face in this match as the hometown girl, pulling the unrepentant stupidity at the start of it by jumping up for the briefcase 5 times, which got me howling. And then at the end, she's taken this bump before, but it is still, I cringe every time I see it, from the ladder outside through 2 different tables. Tough as nails. Io Sky's Michinoku driver on Zoe Stark through the ladder bridge. Good God, those two are just hardcore. Everything
Zoe's
about
a
this
gamer, right? Like, she's never scared to get roughed up. Like, she like volunteers for,
whacked her head good early too. Thing she was doing from the outside of the ring into the inside. And Lyra, actually, I think Lyra has, since coming to the main roster, has really improved. I wasn't a big fan of hers even in NXT as a champion. But she comes in, she's game. I mean, she was taking backdrops on these ladders and stuff. She was
good
tremendously
in NXT UK
impressed
back in the day.
But yes. The bird stuff always bothered me, and they were making fun of her for that too on the show. But she's become a main roster wrestler, and she held her own in this thing too, but I had a blast watching this match. I really did.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think Tiffany's the right call. Because she's going to be involved in that Bayley and Nia story, because she could always cash in on Nia if Nia, for some reason, beats Bayley in Cleveland during SummerSlam.
And she's always like a safe person if someone's getting injured or whatever. You write someone off. Tiffy time makes sense.
Yeah, on either show. If she just showed up on Raw one day and somebody was injured and they wanted to just put the title on her, yeah, definitely. And you know, and Tiffany's always been tough. We've said that a number of times. She just takes falls that a woman just, she did that. She did once again, did the, it's Tiffy time. She screams and they don't catch her. And she kind of landed flat on her back again. It was like, you can't do that over and over and over again and survive. But I mean, it's a wonder at times, but yeah, I thought Io and Zoe, especially, and Io's crazy. Io's just nuts. Just every time you watch her, she's putting a trash can on her head and diving off the top of a cage and stuff. She's amazing. And I think she deserved better as champion of the division, but maybe she'll get another run eventually. And I have no further things on the Bloodline versus Cody, Kevin, and Randy, Chris.
No, I got nothing else to say. I mean, like, you know, it's just like the low
blow. I think the right team
spot
won.
Yeah.
Because we're building to a War Games at Survivor Series.
Right.
So, I mean, I think, yeah. I mean, that's the thing I was noticing between this and, say, the Elite story, which has the Blood and Guts match. It's like the Bloodline are a dominant heel faction. That may not be the most interesting story in the world, but you don't see the Elite being a really dominant faction, you know, overwhelming the show.
Okay, I think it is time for us to talk about AEW Dynamite. Now,
you may start, Chris.
signing Kazuchika Okada. And basically, or Kazuchika Okada, and reducing him down to not, you know, the initial fear is that maybe it'd be like a Nakamura-like presentation where it'd be a little herky-jerky. We've gone to the Tozawa zone, basically, with this guy. Like, he's Tozawa with a belt. It's like fart jokes and ha-ha-has. It's the same thing with Shibata. These are WWE Vince-style characterizations of Japanese wrestlers that I would equate more with mid to late era Vince-isms than the supposedly more enlightened people who are managing AEW.
The people who are AEW tribalists who are trashing Nakamura for just taking the paycheck and wanting to surf, owe Nakamura an apology. Because Nakamura is at least tried at a few different instances. I mean, that Forbidden Door show, I mean, Okada wasn't doing anything. Naito.
Yeah, this is no kata. This is low kata is what we're getting here.
I mean, Naito was just there cashing in a check because that Moxley match was terrible. You know, you kind of had half-assed Tanahashi doing his thing with the acclaimed. Yeah, there was somebody else I was trying to think of. I couldn't at the time, but I mean, it's just, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I still think, look, I'm all about getting paid for doing less work. I'm cool about that, but he's supposed to be coming in to help carry your promotion. That's
right.
The thing.
Like the Ospreys, the Jay Whites, the Okadas, they are supposed to be like the cornerstones of this promotion, the win now guys that you're bringing onto this roster to help put more eyeballs on the show. And this character of Okada is the most boring Okada's been in years.
Did you hear what happened to Jay White last night on Collision?
No, what happened to Jay White last night on Collision?
He and Hangman are doing an Owen match, and Christian comes out and lays out Jay White. So they're going to feud. This is the next Jay White feud. Jay White versus
Jay
Christian.
Jay White's a baby face now?
I think they're about to turn him, yeah. I think this is turning him. Or at least they're going to be the six-man belts between the two of them.
Didn't the crowd want Christian as the baby face when they first started this thing?
I don't know.
Right. I remember the first week, they were torn between the guy who is like at least trying to be a dad, but it's like a bad and fake dad versus the guys who beat up their dad. And they cheered for a bad dad, the patriarchy guy, over Jay White. But now I guess we're turning Jay White. This is good stuff. And meanwhile, Matt and Nick Jackson don't have really a clear relationship with managing the show. You have like a very weird relationship where they don't really have the ability to make matches fully, or they don't, you know, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
I enjoyed Hangman's return versus Jeff Jarrett, but it was mostly because I loved that hope spot of Jeff Jarrett in that match where he ducks the buckshot and then ends up getting him in a clover, not clover leaf. What
a sharpshooter.
Sharpshooter.
Oh, I know.
And he's doing all of Owen's moves and stuff. I really, really did enjoy that match quite a bit.
That was the one part of the show that actually had heart for me. And then
yes.
And then Jarrett didn't win. And I actually, like, man, Jarrett beating Hangman Page in this tournament, it would be a loss that Hangman could absolutely win and it wouldn't mean could actually eat and it wouldn't mean anything and would absolutely set Jarrett White hot going into the finals here.
I bought into Hangman getting DQ'd for kicking too much ass, and that didn't happen either. I thought that might have been not the worst thing in the world either. If you're going to beat Jarrett, just beat the crap out of him so he can't continue in the tournament, and then the guy going up against him gets a bye, and just, you know, and then that's how we resolve that. But no, that was the one thing with Hart, because the thing that they were trying to do with Hart, which was Daniel Garcia is a backbone of AEW.
And the betrayal, the the beloved relationship between MJF and Danny Garcia that we've had, lo, these many couple of weeks, and the betrayal of Danny Garcia.
This is clever as the enemy of good again. Say, well, we need to figure out a way for MJF, who has gone heel face and heel in 3 weeks, get him heel again. We're going to make him look stupid in the biggest match of his career with the ring stuff. And then we're just going to have MJF beat the crap out of him.
Like, and Ospreay, for this whole sequence, too, just in terms of blocking, Ospreay just got done showing a tremendous amount of respect to Danny Garcia and doesn't like MJF. He should see MJF kick Danny Garcia in the nuts and be disgusted by this.
No, he was walking to the back.
Right. Well, I respect you a whole lot, bruv. Oh, you got kicked in the nuts? That's awful, mate. Put some ice on it.
Put like, some ice on it.
Like, jeez.
I'm just like, my AEW can't plot to save its life, and it's killing me at times because it's just like, yeah, okay, two guys can go out and have bangers, and then they're back on Wednesday, and that banger meant absolutely nothing to any division or anything of that. It was just a match to have a good match. Here's the MJF line from Collision, from his promo. He saw about ratings. He goes, guys like Ospreay only care about ratings from guys named Meltzer. I care about ratings from a guy named Nielsen.
Leslie Nielsen still taking phone
calls? Yes, he former. Nice beaver. Thanks. I just had it stuffed. No, Leslie Nielsen's no longer taking calls.
But yeah, like then we'll see how you do on the ratings, but I don't know how big showing yourself week after week, turning face, turning heel, turning face, turning heel. And I mean, essentially just going like, you just enjoy the ride, everybody, don't you? Not really, dude. Like, you know, if we're going to cheer you, we're going to cheer you. If we're going to hate you, we need to hate you. But I don't want to I don't find he's our scumbag to be a particularly useful shield when you're flipping back and forth like this. And
right. But on the same show, also, we finally break off Ospreay away from Don Callis.
Right.
By telling a story they didn't tell on Forbidden Door. On Forbidden Door, in that match against Swerve, which was good, but it was just an overbooked mess with, like, Don Callis coming down with the screwdriver and trying to get him to use it. And the story they've been telling is that Will Ospreay is afraid to use the Tiger Driver because he hurt somebody with it. Not in this match, he wasn't. He was trying for the Tiger Driver. And then we go back to him and Don is like, I was afraid to use the Tiger. No, you weren't. They do this to us all the time. I mean, this is we've talked about this before, where they're telling us a story that they haven't been showing us.
No, if anything, they've been telling the opposite story. And the story this time is that Don Callis was basically right, which is leading into this match, Will Ospreay was watching Swerve Strickland do ruthless stuff last week. He was like, and then Don Callis is basically like, you're going to need to have a little bit more, you know, testicular fortitude here going into this match if you're going to win the title against this guy who, like, wants to stalk your children and has a history of breaking into people's houses. And Will Ospreay's like, oh, I don't know, bro. I don't know. I don't want to use the talking driver. And then, like, the match goes on, and Don Callis is like, you're not getting the job done. You need to go to another level here. And Will Ospreay's like, no, has no plan for what he's going to do other than use the Tiger Driver. Other than using the Tiger Driver, other than to use the Tiger Driver ultimately and not be able to use it successfully. And then the next night he's breaking off from Don Callis, you know, basically going like, I don't want to be ruthless like that. And Don Callis, I mean, honestly, his case to Cal Fletcher is that's because your friend's a loser.
That's Kyle, why I'm going after Roosh right now.
I need you to understand this. This is why he lost. Like, if anything, if they want to salvage this, you have Callis basically get into Fletcher's ear like, your buddy's a loser because he's like this.
Yes. Good. Good doesn't defeat evil because good sucks.
Yeah.
Quote Spaceballs. Yeah, it's just, you have somebody else coming into your house, too.
Yeah, no, it's because good is stupid.
Dude. Good is stupid. Yeah, you're correct. Yeah, yeah, I just.
Well, in this case, right, like Ospreay looked stupid. You knew that Swerve was a dangerous guy going into this match and had adopted a dangerous mindset going into this match, and you weren't able to rise to the occasion.
Jericho do anything for you this week? Hook has terrible clotheslines, by the way. God, those things suck.
Boy, they are like Dad had good ones. Hook does not. I mean, also Hook is a less is more kind of guy too.
Yes.
Right? Like, yeah, the more you see him, the less you need to see him. I think that Jericho on commentary is like a non-factor. The Jericho and Taz stuff is silly, right? And Taz just isn't able to carry the other side of that coin. And I also think
he can't get physical.
Right. And Jericho's shtick is running out of tread. Like it there's, you know, just thanks guys.
I think he's entered into a Brian Alvarez impression too by going into the upper register all the time.
Oh, okay.
I don't know that for a fact, but I could see it happening type of a thing.
It's a very much like the Bucks version of being the evil managers. Jericho's shtick that he's doing right now is deeply self-indulgent. It's like not, it's doing it to pop the boys in the back and doing it to pop yourself.
Yeah. Anything else on an AEW you want to talk about?
I want to say there was actually Baker or Mercedes Moné.
Yes. I thought this was a great promo by Britt. When she came out at Forbidden Door, she didn't smile at all, and I thought it was nerves, and it kind of confirmed that, because she looks like a million bucks. She looks absolutely shredded. I think the problem with this pairing, though, is both Britt and Mercedes, who have an intense amount of respect for each other. Britt actually really likes Mercedes in real life, or at least did at one point. They're both naturally heelish. They both have that chip on that shoulder, that almost, you don't think I'm the best, I'm going to show you type of chip on the shoulder that causes both of them to cut their opponents down all the time. Like, Britt has that just instinct to sandbag somebody verbally all the time. Mercedes does in a way too, in her own way. This might be oil and water type of a thing in terms of, I don't know if we can keep up Britt as the, I mean, they're going to try and do AEW versus WWE, which is going to be interesting. And also, Britt's not as good a wrestler as Mercedes. She's not a main event female wrestler to me. She can do brawls. Like the match with Thunder Rosa, that, you know, with the thumbtacks and everything, was a fantastic match. But it's one of those weird things, especially with the stroke now. I think verbally it's going to be very fascinating to watch this. I'm not certain it's going to work, but week one did work for me. What about you?
I think it's good that we've finally settled in on Mercedes Moné as a heel.
Yes.
That being said, once again, we have too many turns in AEW because we've been spinning our wheels with no clear direction. And right now, Mercedes Moné as a character is just Sasha Banks. There is nothing new about this character.
Although they've now, I think, teamed her up with the Elite, possibly, which might help the Elite a lot in some ways.
That would help the Elite and Okada, and we'd kind of hoped that they would get there, but we also kind of wanted them to get there earlier. Like, she really should have just been aligned with them from the jump.
Here's the other problem, is that when Mercedes is a heel, people love her being a heel to the point that they want to turn her babyface.
Yes. But conversely, when she's a baby, like, this is why bringing her in as a babyface was a mistake. One, it was inherently depending on the goodwill that she had built up on AEW and kind of cynically hoping that Maybe that would pop a rating immediately, rather than doing the bold thing of bringing in the new character and inserting her into a storyline that's like new, fresh, and says, "Oh, this is Sasha Banks, but it's not the Sasha Banks that you remember." Like that sort of thing. Instead, we've now ultimately settled into Mercedes Moné, which is just Sasha 2.0. And Britt, for her part, I mean, I think the matches will be okay. I'm with you, though. I don't really buy her super hard as a babyface, in the same way I don't really buy Mercedes super hard as a babyface, generally speaking. You have to kind of get there with her. And then I guess we're turning Adam Cole babyface at the end of all of this, too. So, like, Britt and Adam are going to be, like, babyfaces.
There might be some things going on there.
Oh.
Let's move on.
Well, everyone's a heel to somebody, Jeff.
No, that's true. Well, but you bring up a point that now that MJF's a heel, does that make Adam Cole a babyface?
Right.
Yeah. So
how do you do that feud?
I don't know. I think maybe MJF takes over the Undisputed Kingdom.
No. And then even then, right?
Like, and then Wardlow's a part of that. Yeah, it just makes no damn sense.
I just hate the inconsistency of the writing on this show because it makes you feel dumb for paying attention.
Yes, I am with you on that.
It's weirdly at once wrestling for the people who are way too obsessed with wrestling, and then also wrestling that makes you feel very dumb for obsessing over the wrestling because, like, the latent stuff isn't there.
Gotta end with a Vader Club, unless you had anything else on AEW you had.
I don't.
I'm gonna tell you this, Chris, because you're kind of interested in this time period.
I am.
93 and 94 are years where if you follow the career of Arn Anderson and Bobby Eaton, it's fascinating. Towards after Bill Watts gets fired, or maybe even when Bill Watts gets in there after the Dangerous Alliance stuff, they fire Bobby Eaton. So he goes off to work at Smoky Mountain Wrestling with Jim Cornette and the Heavenly Bodies, who were at the time were Stan Lane and Dr. Tom Pritchard. Well, they're not doing anything with Arn either, so they kind of ship him off, and he goes over to Smoky Mountain as well, and he teams up with the Rock and Roll Express. I almost picked this match to do the Bluegrass Brawl. May get to it eventually. It's a three-way, nine-person with three different teams type of a thing where it's an elimination type thing with the stud stable of Robert Fuller, Jimmy Golden, who you know as Bunkhouse Buck, and Dutch Mantel. Okay, so then Eaton and Arn eventually are brought back into the fold. Not really doing a lot with them in there. Eaton teams with a Chris Benoit, who they don't sign either. Arn is kind of doing the Horsemen are getting built back up again. There's another match I watched that I almost picked. It was it's Vader and Steve Austin versus Ric Flair and Arn Anderson on a WCW Saturday Night main event type thing that they don't give a conclusion to. That's why I didn't pick it. But they're not really being used all that much. And so in the background, they're starting this. WCW is planning this pay-per-view called When Worlds Collide. It was really the first introduction of luchadors to the American audience. It had Rey Mysterio and Psicosis was on it. It really is what broke them out and got them kind of on the radar of a lot of the smarky type fans like me who were on the internet in Rec Sport Pro Wrestling at the time, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I believe that Paul Heyman either had plans or something like that to use the term When Worlds Collide. I think that might be later. I might be misjudging that, but Heyman at the time, this is still Eastern Championship Wrestling, he's using Terry Funk, who had quote-unquote retired in 92, but he's here, and then WCW kind of wants to use him for Slamboree in that match against Tully Blanchard. And so Paul Heyman reaches out and goes, hey, you got any guys you're not using? I'd like to use the Hollywood Blondes. Well, he can't use the Hollywood Blondes because we just broke up the Hollywood Blondes. So, okay, well, let me use these three guys. He wanted to use Kevin Sullivan. He wanted to use Arn Anderson. He wanted to use Bobby Eaton. So we get this match, and this is on Peacock if you guys want to watch it. It's the main event of ECW When Worlds Collide. It's Terry Funk and Arn Anderson versus Sabu and Bobby Eaton.
I'm watching the leading up to this where Bobby Eaton is the masked man. Who comes in and Bobby Eaton's masked man outfit is the most Bobby Eaton masked man outfit you could possibly have.
Is it better or worse? And have you seen this of the, to introduce Arn Anderson into Smoky Mountain, they did the man under the sheet gimmick where it's like nobody wanted to take the sheet off of him. And everybody's just kind of making fun of it. Then they pull it off. It's Arn Anderson, and like Cornette takes a bump on concrete and stuff.
I forgot that. Yes, the other part of this match is also part of these horrible gimmicks. Like, but Bobby Eaton coming out in a NASCAR racing shirt,
yes,
and like sweatshirt and sweatpants, really sells the
it's
menace.
The most Bobby Eaton masked man. Bobby Eaton was giving no F's at this point. He just wanted a check.
No, I know. And yet at the same time, he jumps over halfway across the ring to deliver the elbow drop. Like, yeah. He doesn't even – he sets up Terry Funk, and you think he's going from one side because he's close to that. He goes further away and jumps well over half the, like, distance of the ring. Just killed me.
Semi-fascinating is watching Arn Anderson and Sabu work with one another. Because you would never think they would gel at all. But also, just the one spot that I absolutely adore in this match is Eaton does the it's not the knee, the leg drop, the guillotine leg drop. I want to call it the Alabama Jam, but I think the Alabama Jam is the knee drop, not the leg drop.
Yeah, the Alabama Jam is the knee drop.
Okay, but he does the guillotine leg drop, and Arn Anderson has the best sell of this thing. He does the thing where he kind of like flips over and acts like Arn Anderson is so great at selling big moves and making guys look like a million bucks. This eventually ends with Arn turning on Terry Funk and leaving him because he accidentally gets hit. It's kind of a wonky finish, so I can't call it a great match, but I was in the mood for some Bobby Eaton and Arn Anderson because I just kind of get in that mood sometimes. Maybe next time I'll do them as a team.
Yeah, right.
They're an interesting WCW tag champs. They don't have a lot to work with there, but.
No, they're good tag champs.
91, right? Because they were brought together by Michael Hayes because it was originally going to be a three-person team, kind of like doing the Freebird rules, and they were calling them, oh, we each represent the three greatest tag teams of the 80s. And then Michael Hayes quit WCW to go be Doc Hendricks in WWF and never wrestle again. He was like 35 and he looks 50. But yeah, maybe
that's the craziest thing to watch with the old Michael Hayes stuff. It's like there are times where I am watching Michael Hayes and I'm like, God, how old is he? And then he's like 3 years younger than I am now. And I'm like, how?
The road will own you, brother.
Oh my God. Yeah, like it's just in 4 years, he aged like 20.
But it's on Peacock if you want to watch it. ECW When Worlds Collide. It is the main event there. Chris will have a selection sometime next week for Vader Club. I'll get that out as soon as he selects it, but let's end it there. You can follow me on X at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris on Instagram at DOCTOR_NOV. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network podcast for all of your niche wrestling loves. Go listen to The Good, The Bad, The Hungry. Go listen to The Flagship with Rich and Joe. Go listen to The 5-Star Match Game. That's always a fun show as well with Joe Gagne. I also do a show called The Dynamite Show. We go live 20 minutes after Dynamite goes off the air. That is on Fight Game Media on all your podcatchers. Audio drops the next day. We do a thorough deconstruction of that week's Dynamite, myself and Paul Fontaine of Figure Four Weekly. Chris, what plugs would you like?
Get guitar lessons on Instagram, or DOCTORNOV or _NOV on Instagram.
And we'll see you next week.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. it also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.